everyone. My name is Eric Bowe, and welcome to the Primal Shopper Podcast. This podcast is for marketers, entrepreneurs, and those who are interested in understanding why we shop the way we do. My goal of this podcast is to focus on the primal motivations driving our behaviors, and just as importantly, how to apply these learnings to improve your marketing. Don't worry about taking notes. I will include any links in the show notes. Also, there is plenty of bonus content on primalshopper.com. Finally, I am publishing a book in early 2019 where I'll get into a lot more detail on topics I discuss in these podcasts. I welcome you to my first episode of Primal Shopper. I look at this as a foundational episode, which it really sets up a lot of things I'm going to be talking about in future podcasts. I'm going to probably get a little geeky on shopper DNA and stuff like that. I hope you enjoy my enthusiasm around it. But the real reason why you should care is it does affect how you can grow market share. To this end, I'll talk about a concept called the motivational layer. The motivational layer, the encapsulation of the different ways in which we shop, the shopper DNA that guides us. They're sort of one and the same. In this episode, I will discuss what is this motivational layer, and by the way, why should you care? The discovery of shopper DNA in all of us. I'll discuss the different shopper DNA types and how to apply the motivational layer to your marketing. So I'd like to kick this podcast off by talking to you about the motivational layer. My perspective of the retail environment or how we buy, there's really two different primary layers driving a shopper's purchase decision. The first one is the desire layer. It's our relationship to the product, is how we feel about it, whether it's something that is we're passionate about, or do we view the product more as a commodity? The other layer is the motivational layer. This is our motivations when we shop within the retail environment. Both of these are critical to understand and to market to if you're going to increase market share. Let me give you an example. Let me talk about the iPhone X. The iPhone X has been on the market for a while, and roughly it goes for about $1,000 if you're going to pay for it out of pocket. So many people are out there and they see the commercials. They're very nicely done by Apple, and they may desire it. They may want to have that iPhone X. Then they look at the price, $1,000. Now, some people out there who are more price blind, this would not affect them, and they'll probably go ahead, especially if they're tech geeks, and they may buy this product. The majority of people out there are going to look at that $1,000 and go, you know what? No, not going to happen. I want the product, but I'm not willing to pay for that type of product. And this is part of your shopper DNA that is kicking in. However, things happen. For example, lately, T-Mobile just came out with a promotion. And in this promotion, if you switch your contract to T-Mobile, what they would do is they would give you several free iPhone Xs as a part of your new plan. This would sound pretty cool to some shoppers because, first of all, they desire the iPhone X, and now they can get it for free. And what's better than free? So it sort of gives you an idea of how these two different layers work. The desire layer is how you actually relate to a product, while the motivational layer is your shopper DNA, which governs how you actually buy within the retail environment. Right now, I'd like to make it a little personal. Think about a situation of a product or brand you really like to buy, you really desire it. However, you're not willing to buy it for some reason. Primarily, the reason could be price, and that's rather obvious, but there are other reasons within your shopper DNA on why you may not buy a product. And as I get into the shopper DNA more in this podcast, you'll understand the different situations where the motivational layer may either impede or accelerate the purchase of a product. Before I get into the shopper DNA, I'd like to tell you a bit of a backstory that inspired me to actually uncover and find it. And that story lies within Myers-Briggs. Some of you may be familiar with Myers-Briggs, others may not. In a nutshell, Myers-Briggs measures our preference to how we interact with the outside world. Now, I'm not an expert at it. It did inspire me, and I'll tell you a short story around that. But if you want to learn more, you can easily Google it, and there's a lot of content online. You could take tests to figure out what your Myers-Briggs typology is. My personal Myers-Briggs story actually spans over several tests. The first few times I took the Myers-Briggs survey was with an HR person who honestly felt he had a new tool, and they go, hey, let's take a Myers-Briggs test. It'll help you understand yourself, which sounded like a good idea. Got the test done, and usually the person said to me something around, you know, you're blah, blah, blah. And it's probably all I remembered from the first few times I took the test. The third time was a little different. I was at a company and we had an offsite centered around Myers-Briggs. And to do this, they brought in a professor from Oakland University, which is a university in the Detroit suburbs. He was well-versed in Myers-Briggs and sort of guided us through the survey, understanding what it meant, and just as importantly, what it did not mean. For example, if you look at Myers-Briggs, there's four different dichotomies within it. The first one is called favorite world. Favorite world's dichotomy is extrovert versus introvert. The interesting thing from our agency survey was that a lot of our account people were typed out as introverts. And this surprised a lot of us because we interpreted this as how gregarious you are, but that was not the case. The professor informed us that really extrovert versus introvert was how you recharge your batteries. An extrovert recharges around others, and I'm an extrovert, and what I do, I get a lot of energy from being around other people. While introverts, on the other hand, they prefer to withdraw and recharge on their own. Found that interesting, and we kept going through the process, understanding each typology, and then we got to the last one, which is called structural world. Structural world's dichotomy is judging and perceiving. Judging are people who like structure. They like lists. They like predictability. This is where my wife lives, actually. It's interesting when you look at your marriage in regards to this. Perceiving, on the other hand, prefer more of a fluid world. They don't like as much structure, and this is sort of where I live. As you can imagine, in a marriage, you have like these opposing forces of one spouse wants a person to be in the structural world while the other spouse is trying to pull them into more of the free form and let's wing it type of world. The professor touched on this concept and said, look, often you're with others and you're going to have to go against your natural state, against your preferred state. And in this case, mine was perceiving versus my wife's, which is more structure. And it would be probably fine in that world, at least for a while. However, something's going to happen. Because you're working against your internal inertia, you are going to snap back to your preferred preference. Think of it like a rubber band. You can stretch it very far, but after a while, the tension is going to cause it to snap back. And this is sort of how the preferred state works. This concept of a preferred state had a profound effect on me. At the time that I took this test, I was sort of riding the digital wave. It was 2000, 2001, around there. And a lot was happening. There was a lot of things coming and going. It just seemed like digital was the place to be. Underneath the covers, what was really occurring, though, that was really fascinating to a lot of businesses, and it still exists today, is the rise of big data. Big data impacted business like nothing before, because now we could actually stitch together what was really going on in the retail world. Over this time period, I worked for several car companies, and they were sitting on a lot of data, folks. Part of my job was to take a look with others at what was really going on and decipher the marketing to figure out what was driving success, and just as importantly, what was preventing these companies from selling more vehicles. One night in particular sticks out in my mind, and I was working on Ford, I think it was about 2007, 2008 timeframe, and we're trying to figure out incentives relative to a CRM program and why some people were taking advantage of the incentives and why some weren't. We kept looking at the data from every different perspective we could, and we really weren't finding anything. And then it sort of occurred to me, we were trying to read the data tea leaves. And the problem is the data is a subset of really what's going on in reality. So what we did is we inverted our perspective. So instead of looking at the data tea leaves, we started looking at the behavioral tea leaves. We started combining research from different sources, starting with how people behaved within the automotive marketing. This set us on a completely new course. This helped us understand a lot of what was going on with the incentives and why some people were taking them and others were not. A critical insight from that experience with the incentives was that it was about behaviors. Look, if you ever want to unlock someone's true intention, observe their behaviors. In other words, behaviors don't lie. In marketing, we ask questions many different ways. Sometimes it gives us a false impression of really what's going on or what could potentially happen. Take recycling, for example. In a survey about recycling, I've seen it asked many different ways, but one of the ways they ask is, in the future, do you plan on recycling more? A lot of people answer in the affirmative. Just because they answered in the affirmative does not mean they are going to actually behave that way. A better way to pose this question is, in the past week, have you recycled? or in the past week, have you recycled items that didn't require a deposit? Or better yet, what types of items did you recycle in the past week and how did you dispose of them? In other words, when we look at behaviors, we're looking at the effort. The effort tells us the true motivation. And this is an important insight, especially when you want to understand in the retail market what's going on. So let's apply this thought process to shopping. From an attitudinal perspective, I can ask different questions. For example, in the future, do you plan on spending more time to get better deals or save money? Or of the brands you buy on a regular basis, do you plan on being more loyal in the future? Like the recycling question, I'm going to get probably what people intend to do, or rarely does this turn into reality. Compare those two questions with something more different. For example, when you shopped last for groceries, did you use coupons? Or did you look online or in inserts to compare prices between different grocery stores before you went to shop? From a brand loyalty perspective, there's a simple question to ask. Of the last 5 times you bought the product, did you buy the same brand every time? This is behavioral loyalty as opposed to intention. This is what the shopper DNA is all based on. It's based on behaviors of how we act, specifically in a most recent purchase. Asking attitudinal questions is not a bad idea. In fact, it can be used to understand the motivational state of what somebody wants to achieve. But you need to ask the behavioral questions. The behavioral questions reveal the true intent of what the shopper does on a regular basis. And this is the critical part of the shopper DNA I'm about to go through. So combine this behavioral questioning with the preferred state, and this is how we reveal the shopper DNA that is within all of us. So let me dive into the shopper DNA that I discovered with the help of many people and a lot of trial and error, to be honest with you. But what we found was there was 3 core DNA in all of us: wallet, time, and brand. Let me walk through each one of these and really explain what the DNA is all about and give you a few product category examples. The first one is wallet. Like Myers-Briggs, each one of these DNA strands is a dichotomy. Wallet is deal seeker and price blind. Deal seekers, sort of self-explanatory, they exert effort to get the lowest price. The key phrase here is exert effort. This effort could include clipping coupons, spending time prior to going to the store, looking for the best price in inserts or online. This can include apps, and it may include even spending more time in the store comparing prices to get the best value or best perceived value. Price blind, which is the opposite of this, does not exert the effort. In effect, in many cases, the price blind person buys retail or really doesn't care what they pay. A couple examples from a product category perspective. The first is auto insurance. In auto insurance, I like to refer to it as the Geico effect. Over 80% of the people shopping for auto insurance are deal seekers. 80%. This is quite a bit. It's the highest of any category to date. One of the reasons why is sort of in the name, the Geico effect. Geico is probably the best example of how auto insurance has evolved. So two things are going on. One, usually in every commercial pod, you will see an auto insurance ad. And many of the ads promise you savings, like Geico. If you spend up to 15 minutes, well, you can, and you know how that phrase ends. Actually, most of America does because it's been pummeled into our brains for about a decade. So that's rather obvious, not a big surprise. Sort of the market is driving this overall deal-seeking mentality, the deal-seeking mindset. Something else is happening beneath the covers. Auto insurance is a necessity for most people. I live in Michigan. In order to drive, you are supposed to have auto insurance. Now, with the necessity-based purchases, many people try to minimize the cost. So if somebody's telling you you can get a great deal, it really resonates with people buying necessity. So therefore, they want to go out of their way to spend the least amount possible. An interesting part about this is that, in general, you can look at different studies for this, about 40% of the people shop for auto insurance every year, but only about 10 to 15% switch. The persistent promise of saving money within the auto insurance category is propelling people to look on a regular basis. Let's look at a category now that is high in price blind shoppers, and that is fast casual restaurants. Within the fast casual restaurant category, you're going to find restaurants like Panera, Five Guys Burgers, Chipotle. These are like a step above fast food restaurants. For this category, it's the opposite of what you find in auto insurance, with only 17% of people being deal seekers. Again, several reasons for this. The obvious one is that it's more of a quality food. So unlike the deal-centric approach to fast food, fast casual is about quality products. It's a step above what you're going to get at a McDonald's, at a Burger King, at a Taco Bell. But there's something more subtle here. Think of different ads you've seen for fast casual. First of all, you don't see a lot of them. But the ones you do, specifically think about Panera. It's about quality. It's about ingredients. They are not doing what I call deal-vertising. They are not pushing price. What they are doing is elevating the category as a premium purchase, therefore increasing the number of price-blind people and reducing the amount of deal seekers. The next DNA strand is time. Within time, you have mission shoppers and you have journey shoppers. The mission shoppers want to get in and out of the retail environment as quickly as possible, while the journey shoppers, they like to explore. They look for options. They want to see what brands are available. On a personal perspective, I'm a dominant journey shopper. In fact, sometimes it gets really bad. For example, with Lowe's, no one in my family will go with me to Lowe's anymore. Reason being is, usually when I go in, I'm checking everything out. This time of year, you got holiday decorations, new snowblowers. I'll go up and down every aisle. I even can remember a time when I went in there for a specific item, spent 45 minutes shopping, and walked out without the item. Totally forgot about it. Anyway, well, again, not really a list maker. Go figure. Several things about time that have emerged in different studies. Number one, while mission is get in and out and on with your life and journey is more exploration, there's emotions tied deeply into both of these. The mission shoppers, more often than not, hate shopping. While journey shoppers usually love it, the shop therapy, they could even look at it as entertainment. Another interesting aspect to this is a 50-50 split. Pretty much every study across the board is a 50-50 split between mission and journey shoppers. Sometimes it's a little off, like 45-55, but typically it's very close, and this is very interesting. Often when you talk to people and they're mission shopper, they assume everybody hates shopping like they do. Or conversely, if you're a journey shopper, they assume everybody likes to shop. In general, though, it's like a 50-50 split. Worth noting is your DNA may change from product category to product category. And I'm not just talking time here. So for example, with time, I may hate grocery shopping, but I may like going to the hardware store or going to the clothing store. So it isn't that your DNA is necessarily set across all product categories. It can shift. So, and this also applies to wallet and to brand.
Speaking of brand, let's spend a few minutes and talk about the brand DNA. Brand is split between brand citizen and free agent. For the brand citizen, brand is important in their purchase process. To gauge importance, we look at the effort the shopper is willing to put into getting their brands. One example is, are they willing to go out of their way to buy a specific brand? A personal example is, I do a lot of my grocery shopping at Kroger nearby. However, I'm a bit of a beer enthusiast, so one of the beers I like is Southern Tier, and they don't carry this at Kroger. So what I will do is go to a local craft beer store and buy this. A second aspect of effort is, what do you do if the brand is unavailable? Do you buy another brand, or do you wait and buy it later? So for example, if I were to go into that craft beer store and they were out of Southern Tier, do I buy another brand, or do I wait until they get Southern Tier in? Again, both of these effort questions give you an idea of how we assess the strength of brand citizenship. Another aspect of brand is discovery. For example, many people go into their shopper journey with multiple brands in mind, and the goal of the journey is to whittle it down to the one they inevitably purchase. However, there's also the option to discover brands along the way. I did a study a while back on garage door openers, and garage door openers, to say the least, are infrequent purchases. You may buy a garage door opener, if you're a homeowner, every 15 years. And there's not a lot of advertising in the category or overall brand awareness. So most people, when they buy one, have to discover a brand they buy. Now, you could go up and look at the brand that you have installed in your garage, but most people will actually look around, starting with online. They'll go online to see what brands are available and look for sites to compare them to help them decide which one's best for their needs. Another method would be to go into Lowe's or Home Depot and just see what they have there and possibly talk to the salesperson. Finally, you may ask friends or family members what garage door openers they have And how do they like it, or how dependable is it? Let's take a look at a couple of product categories in relation to brand. The first one is dog food. Dog food shoppers are primarily brand citizens. For dog owners listening to this podcast, you probably know why. Once you find a dog food that your dog likes, you tend to stick with it because switching from dog food can actually cause problems with the dog's stomach, and the dog may get sick and throw up, which is probably the reason why you have such high brand citizenship in dog food. Another category I like to talk about is mobile phones. Mobile phone shoppers are the opposite of dog food shoppers. They're primarily free agent. Some people are surprised that mobile phones are primarily free agents. But if you think about it, it sort of makes sense. How often do you buy a new mobile phone? Every 2, 3 years? Typically, your phone gets old, it may break, or you're up for a new contract. At that point, you'll swap out the phone. But in this 3-year time span, what's going on in the industry? Well, phones continue to evolve. Technology continues to evolve. So when you go look for that new phone, you're looking for, well, what's the latest and greatest? What's new? And what is the right phone for you? Many times when you have this jump in technology, people are open to discover different brands. Therefore, the free agency tends to be higher in these categories, especially if technology is changing rapidly within the category.
So to quickly recap, I talked about wallet, the deal seeker versus price blind, time, mission versus journey, and brand citizen versus free agent. We have all three in us, but they're in there at the same time and they're combined together. This is where Primal Shopper really takes off. By combining these three DNA, you get an acute behavior. And if you combine them together, what you end up with is 8 core typologies. What I would like to do right now is go through 2 of these typologies. You can review all 8 on primalshopper.com. I have a brief write-up of each one and a few tactics to consider if they are dominant within your category. The first typology I'd like to talk about is what I call a deal surgeon. They're a deal seeker, mission, and free agent. Bottom line, they want to save twice. First off, they want to save money and as much money as possible. So what they will do is they will exert time and effort outside of the retail environment to find the best savings. Notice I said outside of the retail environment. The other thing they want to do is limit the time within the retail environment. Again, they're a mission shopper. They will go out of their way to focus their shopping to get in, out, and on with their life. An interesting aspect to the mission shopper or the deal surgeon per se is the rise of Cyber Monday versus Black Friday. The deal surgeon always wants the deal, but they want it without a lot of retail hassle. If you look at the trend line for Cyber Monday versus Black Friday, what you're seeing is Cyber Monday is increasing more and more every year, while Black Friday, especially retail traffic within stores, is declining every year. Now, is that all deal surgeon? No, but at the same time, the deal surgeon is definitely one that will be attracted more to Cyber Monday, specifically if they can find the best deals online. Keep in mind when you're reading through the primal shopper typologies, you may be one typology like a deal surgeon in one category, say grocery shopping, and you can be a completely different typology in another product category. Another example I want to go through is called a brand tracker. This is somewhat similar to a deal surgeon. They're a deal seeker and their mission. The difference is they're a brand citizen. These people love their brands. However, they want a deal on their brands too. Given they buy their brands on a regular basis, they're very price aware. And so when they see the deal, they usually strike. Recently, when I was in Kroger, I saw an example of a brand tracker in regards to Coca-Cola. At the time, Kroger had a sale on Coca-Cola products. Normally, they're $4.99 a piece for a 6-pack of bottles. However, if you bought 3, you paid only $11, saving about $4 on those 3 different 6-packs. This woman in front of me, I kid you not, had a cart full of Coca-Cola products. My guess is there's about 12 6-packs in there, 6 regular and 6 Diet Coke. If you add it up, she probably saved about, $16. And given the amount of Coca-Cola she brought that day, I doubt if she's going to be buying it for a while. So that is several typologies. Again, you can go to primalshopper.com and review all 8 typologies. I also put sample surveys up there. So you can take a Primal Shopper survey to see what typology you are. I put 4 different product categories up there: dog food, fast food restaurants, grocery, and mobile phones. So feel free to take one of those surveys and then compare your results to the Primal Shopper guide. the typologies I went through and the DNA make up the motivational layer. So what I want to do now is talk about how to apply the motivational layer to your marketing. The first step is to survey your product category. And there's two things you want to understand with this. Number one, what are the dominant typologies within your product category? And number two, how well does your brand do with those typologies? Let me give you an example of this. In auto insurance, there are four dominant typologies. The two highest are deal surgeon and bargainista, which is not a surprise, being free agent and deal seeker. People want a deal and they're willing to switch brands to get the deal. The second two are brand tracker and brand fanatics. So while these two typologies also are deal seeker, like bargainista and deal surgeon, they are brand citizens, meaning brand is important in their purchase decision. So that's the overall category, but what does it look like when you take a look at individual brands? Let's talk about Geico first. Geico does very well with deal surgeon and bargainistas because it really attracts free agents. Well, why is that? Well, we've already talked about it earlier in this podcast. It's their brand promise of if you have 15 minutes, you can save up to 15%. Their entire message is very transactional based. Compare this to State Farm. State Farm, on the other hand, has high brand citizenship. And how do they do their advertising? Well, they still say you can get a deal, but the difference is they focus on their agents. They focus on the relationship. So if you're a brand in the auto insurance category, what can you do to increase your market share? Well, you have two choices. The first is to increase your motivational share within your core typologies. The reason you begin here is because your marketing is already attracting these typologies. So the goal would be to continue to optimize your messaging or your promotions to increase your overall motivational share within those typologies. A second option is a little more difficult to do, is to shift the entire category towards your motivational share. There's a recent example using Sprint in the cellular category where they actually did this. Think about cellular services. For the longest time, it was about quality. For years, it was AT&T and Verizon. It was about maps. It was about, can you hear me now? It was about quality. But in the last few years, this shifted. Enter Sprint using Paul Marcarelli. You may be unfamiliar with his name, but you know his face. He's the guy in the Verizon ads for years who said, can you hear me now? Well, recently he's been helping Sprint out to undermine Verizon's quality story, and it's working. But it wasn't just Paul saying they're all the same, which he did. The reality was things started shifting from cellular plans that penalize people for going over their allotted minutes to unlimited plans at a fixed price. This, in many respects, took the category from quality to commoditization. And with commoditization, you have people moving from brand citizen to free agent and from price blind to deal seeker. So in many respects, what Sprint did was move the motivational layer to their favor and increasing share. Now, were they the only ones? No. You had other companies, many other companies, as a matter of fact, some of which like T-Mobile, MetroPCS, who also jumped into the fray, offered similar packages, similar promotions, basically helping commoditize the category. But there was one more aspect with this, and that is the fact that while you may desire a phone, your cell service is a necessity. And in many respects, people, like with auto insurance, want to minimize the amount they spend on this necessity. Now, is this going to change? Well, could. Soon 5G technology will be coming out. And along the way, it could shift back. If there's a quality difference, Verizon may go back to the top and there will be more wars between Verizon and AT&T in regards to coverage maps. Or will it change at all? A precedent has been set that people are only going to spend so much for cell service. Is 5G going to be so much better that people are going to pay a significant amount more? Maybe. That is yet to be seen. So what about your motivational layer? As I stated prior, I included several surveys on the site. Feel free to incorporate these within your market research. If you have any questions on how to apply the Primal Survey to your marketing, feel free to contact me. My contact information is on primalshopper.com, and I would be happy to help you out. Well, that wraps up the first episode. First off, thanks for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, I encourage you to subscribe to future episodes by going to primalshopper.com. Also, there's plenty of other information on primalshopper.com if you're interested in the subject, and I'll keep you apprised of the progress of my book and upcoming episodes. Well, that's it for now. Until next time, This is Eric Bowe on the Primal Shopper Podcast.